day we were perturbed by the news that two men had arrived back at their factory in Barcelona and asked for work. They had left to go to the Aragon front 4 months before. They were Poom men. Well, they had been Poom men, but they offered to join a battalion defending Madrid. What sort of army had Poom got defending the Aragon front if men could walk away just like that? Oh, they're common deserters, argued the Poom youngsters. They were not. They wanted to fight. They had left, so our Catalan comrade told us, because their battalion was not fighting. And there was worse to come. One of them was on sentry duty one night when he challenged a man coming through the defences from Huesca, out of the fascist-held town itself. That man was his own superior officer who'd been drinking over there with a fascist. No, the rank and file did not know what their officers were doing. One evening I met some friends at the Cedar Cafe in the heart of the city. We pushed two marble-topped tables together up there on the balcony, and the proprietor brought us each a serviette, a quarter litre of white wine, a tiny roll of bread, and a nice fork and spoon. Outside, the streets were very dark. The good man had the reputation of making the best coffee in the neighbourhood, and was proud of it. When substitutes came in, he breathed like a workman the rest of his tools, but even then he made the best substitute. Below and around us, men and their wives sat at little round tables and drank coffee and hot liqueurs remained. The talk at the tables was lively. As he laid our table, the owner whispered, you remember that man who used to sit at the table next to you? I've just heard that he's been assassinated by incontrollables. UDT man, wasn't he? Yes, he had a secretarial post in the Ministry for Justice. Towards the end of our frugal meal, he came again. Looks as though something's going to break. The atmosphere is tense, isn't it? That's why I've pulled down the shutters. You needn't hurry, you know. A friend pulled out a copy of La Battaglia. We read a paragraph that called for a surmise and discussion. It said, all active members of the Poom who belong to the People's Military Academy and who have been assigned to various posts in Catalonia or at the front are urgently requested to report to the Military Executive Committee, the Rambla de los Estudios, number 10, Executive Committee Room, as soon as possible on a most important matter. What are they planning? They were calling men from the front to Barcelona. They argued that they hadn't enough arms. Well, no one had, but they did not use what they had. The youngsters who paraded the streets making themselves a nuisance really believed that they had no arms. But the leaders knew better. At the beginning of the war, the government had put out the call, all arms to the front, and men had turned them in. But Poom had hidden theirs. Another paragraph drew our attention. We cannot tolerate it any longer, ran the words of the Trotskyite leadership, that the militia on the Aragon front are oppressed and shabbily treated, while a life of uncurbed and bestial license is carried on in the hinterland. If Valencia will not give us money to live on, if it cannot supply the troops at the front with food and clothes, we are prepared to plunder and tear the clothes off the bourgeoisie in the open streets. No loyal Spaniard wrote that, murmured one of the comrades. Who did? Went through our minds. Again we turned the pages of this rag. We read, on May the 1st this year, the Spanish proletariat must strive towards a higher goal, the attainment of power. So they were going to fight the bourgeoisie with arms that they said they hadn't got. We talked of the magnificent fighting that was going on in the north among the mining people of Asturias. We agreed that if we could force an offensive on the Aragon front, the people in the north might have a chance to smash the fascist lines. The government had allotted a flat on Gracia in Barcelona for those of us from Britain who worked there. I stood on the balcony and watched the funeral procession Roldan Cortado, the government official who'd been assassinated. It was dignified and quiet, and there were many flowers. Soldiers of the newly formed army attended, and there were hundreds of followers. Poom took the opportunity to call it a provocative show of armed force. On Monday morning, May the 3rd, there was excitement in the air. Young people were reporting to the Poom office in Barcelona, saying that they'd been called in for duty. Workers are coming to their into their own, was being mouthed around. La Battaglia published, "We are in complete agreement with one of the anarchist groups which today is at loggerheads with the CNT, with the CNT leaders, who are loyal to the government," and published the following slogan, "All power to the working class." The anarchist group mentioned was a group of incontrollables calling themselves Friends of Durruti. The anarchists denied having anything to do with them. I went out, and as I was walking across the square, I noticed a cordon of blue uniformed assault guards round the telephone building and wondered what could be going on. The streets were quiet and there were not many people about. The guards were asking people to move on. I was about to return to the flat when I heard shots. People scattered. A man at my side said quietly, "Don't run, don't run." Shopkeepers were hastily putting up their shutters. I looked back and the cordon was gone, but the guards were saying politely, "Move on, please, don't stand about." Occasionally a red and black busload of anarchists went by with rifle nozzles sticking out of the windows. Waiters at cafes were asking their customers to pay at once and go home. Then the cafes were closed. Now and again I heard more shots as I went along the Rambla. One of the exclusive clubs of the aristocracy in Grafia had been taken over for the Pasuk headquarters. A comrade at the door of our flat said, "They're expecting an attack on Pasuk headquarters tonight. I'm going over to help defend it. It's that incontrollable crowd that's responsible for this," he added angrily. Poom was putting out provocative messages like, "The communists have united with the bourgeoisie and support the government that is not a government of the working people. We're going to get this city into the hands of the working class. The trade unions shall have power." There were five of us in the flat. None of us went out. It was quiet in the evening. The Basque country was aflame with German bombardment, and we had to sit there in that uncanny quiet. We'd not been in bed 10 minutes when an explosion rang out. It was answered by rifle shots from an anarchist building nearby. Then quiet again. Early next morning, I went to a shop just round the corner. Cobblestones had already been torn up and there were barricades across the roads. A car swung round the corner. Two men coming towards me cried out, "Look out!" And grabbing a woman in front of me, they ran to the deep gutter and told her to lie flat, and the car rushed by. There was some shooting from its windows. I bought a few old biscuits and some tinned food before the shopkeeper hastily put up the shutters and closed his shop. At 8 o'clock, the shooting burst out all over the city. From every barricade, Poom members shot at passers-by. The anarchists who were already in their buildings stayed there, defending them and replying to the attacks of firing that were levelled against them from time to time. Pasuk men defended Karl Marx's house, their headquarters. All day long, the anarchists situated diagonally across the street fired into it, and the men in Carlos Marx's house fired back at the gun nested in the tower that looked like a sugar cake, but defied removal. The assault guards on the roofs of their barracks attempted to put anarchist headquarters out of action. The carabineros stretched machine guns across the street, named Cortes. We peeped through the shutters of the flat, running backwards and forwards from front to back to watch the activity. After some hours, we felt exhausted with the noise. I made tea and we ate a little bread. There was not much to eat in the flat, but women can always scrape up a meal. As we were told by our American friends later on, bridges may be blown up, cities in flames, and the water frozen and the matches damp, but the British will always stop to make tea. That night, the communist and anarchist leaders called on the radio to all citizens to stay in their houses and on all parties to cease firing and let the government deal with the situation. Yes, the radio was working. Most people obeyed. The streets were desolate. We were able to telephone our friends in various parts of the city. The telephone operators were working too. By Wednesday, Poon was boasting that they were holding the city. A comrade crept home in the early hours of the morning. What's it all about? No one knows, he replied. The government has ordered us to cease firing, but we've no ammunition except a little that Pasuk got in when we read La Battaglia on Monday. I wish we knew what was going on at the front. It's awful not knowing what's going on there. During the day, there was a knock at the front door. We all went and opened it cautiously. There stood two men with hand grenades in each hand. Which is the way to the roof? One of them asked. Up there, we told him, pointing to the stairs. Stay indoors, comrade, said the man quietly, and went up. Ping, ping went bullets against the wall, followed by the burst of hand grenades. I think it would be a good idea, said someone, if we were to pile some mattresses and rolls of carpet and anything we can find against the back window. But don't go too near the window when the firing's going on, only during a lull. When night came, the firing died down. Except for an occasional shot, the city was quieter than death. Next morning, there was a different sound. Could it be singing? We phoned a friend at a hotel in the Rambler. Yes, troops from Valencia were marching through the streets. The Poom leaders had been arrested. I went out and saw groups of women tearing down the barricades, and they were singing. They relayed the cobblestones, and the city was rejoicing that the rebellion had been suppressed. Newspapers in normal form, not the curtailed sheets that had been coming out, appeared on the streets again. They told the bitter news that the north was being ravaged by the fascist aeroplanes and that all activity had ceased on the Aragon front, where the fascists had held planes ready to aid Poom in Barcelona. Poom was made an illegal party. The government had released troops swiftly and efficiently to quell the uprising. I went back to the office, and information came in from sources which we ourselves investigated. We learnt that Poom had issued a bulletin called the Spanish Revolution on the day I had seen the cordon round the telephone exchange. It stated that assault guards under the command of Rodriguez Salas, commissar of public order and a member of PASUK, tried to take the telephone building by force. The occupation was supported by a detachment of armed men, both police and guards and cavalry. The attack on the telephone building was the cause of surprise and indignation to the telephone workers who resisted the occupation of the building. This wretched bulletin was sent abroad and quoted at length in foreign papers. Poom claimed that that was the cause and beginning of all the fighting in the streets. Well, I'd been there. I knew that there were no police and no cavalry. An international group of workers went from our office for news of what actually did happen, and this is a translation of a report that the Commissar of Police issued. In the first place, there was no occupation of the telephone building, nor was there any question of occupying it. On May the 3rd, Salas received a signed order from the Government Minister of Public Order, stating that a government representative was to be installed in the telephone building and that he was responsible for seeing that it was done. Accordingly, he went with a captain and a personal escort of four men, and entering the building he asked to see some responsible member of the committee. He was told there was none such in the building. However, they waited downstairs while someone went to look. 2 minutes later, some individuals started shooting from the stairs. No one was hit. He immediately phoned for guards to come, not to occupy the building, but to cordon it off and prevent anyone from entering. He knew that the sounds of firing would have been heard outside, and he wanted to prevent anything in the nature of a disturbance. The guards, about 100 of them, arrived and cordoned off the building. Salas and one other went up to the top, where these irresponsible men had established themselves with a machine gun, hand grenades and rifles. The two went up together without escort and without weapons. At the top floor, he explained the purpose of his visit. The men left their weapons and came down. The government representative was installed. Salas ordered the cordon to be withdrawn. There were no casualties and no arrests. Of course, people were asking what the government representative was for. The telephone was run by a committee of the workers, wasn't it? There was never any question of attacking the workers' right of control. But at least one fascist had worked his way onto the workers' committee and insisted on controlling all conversations of a secret and military nature. The man in the control box would cut people off and even intervene in conversation. What finally decided the government to send a representative was a serious incident. The government in Valencia put a call through to the Catalan government, and the man in the control box informed Valencia there was no government in Barcelona, only CNT and PSOE. 52 men were found in the building and a quantity of arms, so of course it was assumed that the man's orders came from Franco. The cleaning up went on. A committee was appointed to look into the activities of PUM in the army. The guards went clear through Catalonia like a comb, leaving men behind in each town, going about in threes and all armed. They were workmen in blue monos and alpargatas, not soldiers. In the houses belonging to PUM, they found 6 truckloads of silver stolen from churches and private houses, bombs, hand grenades, and all kinds of weapons, besides documents proving they were tools of the fascists. More than 200 spies were arrested in Madrid, too. They had their network extending over the Republican National Guard, the Naval and Air Ministries, Red Cross, the Army Ambulance Service, and other places of importance. They'd been supplying the fascists with secret military information like positions of batteries. Amongst papers found was reference to preparing an armed rebellion and relying on their excellent relations with extremist groups like PUM. In the Peruvian embassy in Madrid, they found plans showing exact positions of anti-aircraft batteries defending Madrid and of the Republican batteries in the Casa del Campo. Plans of how the army was placed and staff maps stolen from headquarters. There was also a large-scale detailed map of Madrid, carefully annotated with instructions to the fascists. And as a final proof of the work of PUM, they found part of a letter on the back of a map written in invisible ink addressed to Franco, saying that the fascists within PUM had set up a transmitting station for direct communication between their firm and effective supporters in Barcelona and General Franco. So we in Barcelona were left with heavy shame. Years afterwards, I am asking, are we, who lived through those days, doing enough to warn the young people of today of the awful danger that Trotskyite influence is to world socialism?